SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24-7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Welcome to the Morning After on Sports Grid. You're listening on Sirius XM Channel 204, and I'm your host, Ariel Epstein, taking you through the next 3 hours. There's a lot to get to. There's always a lot to get to, and this is supposed to be a really low and slow time of year. Baseball is what we're betting on. The Olympics are going to start tomorrow, which means that we're going to have the Olympics to bet on. There are odds up on the FanDuel Sportsbook, yet we've been waiting for drama. There really hasn't been much drama around sports. Yes, there's questions as to where certain players are going to go in the NBA offseason. The NHL has a new team, an expansion team, the Seattle Kraken. Yet, in Major League Baseball, hasn't been so drama-filled. NFL, college football, it's been pretty quiet until yesterday. College football really took center stage last night. And I know that my co-host, Ben Stevens, who absolutely loves college sports, is going to have a lot to say about it this morning. Ben, good morning to you and happy Thursday.
Ariel, a very happy Thursday indeed. In my time co-hosting the Morning After with you, we have never led off with college football. But here we are leading off with college football because, Ariel, the landscape of all of collegiate athletics, if the reports out there about Texas and Oklahoma looking to leave the Big 12, maybe joining the SEC, are in fact true, and this comes and plays out, well, then the entire landscape we have seen will be changed forever. And it is a very interesting, exciting, depending on where you are backing right now, time in college sports with a lot of speculation out there, a lot of rumoring, a lot of conference realignment talk, all right now in the summer as we have media days around the country taking place, Ariel. So this is a fodder and a topic for conversation as it currently stands.
I'm curious how much the SEC is regretting having a 4-day media day, because if media days were only 2 days, like normal conferences, the SEC would have been over on Tuesday and the questions won't have to be addressed. Well, now there's going to be questions if there's two new teams entering the conference. It was breaking yesterday and it says that Texas and Oklahoma are eyeing the SEC. The Big 12 powerhouses have reached out about joining the conference, Oklahoma and Texas. This, it could go both ways, Ben. It's either, hey, we can have a really big super conference and things are going to be really competitive, or you're going to be handing really good teams more losses. Then what does that do when you're trying to figure out who gets into the college football playoff? There's one man that really didn't seem too fazed by it. It was the Texas A&M coach, Jimbo Fisher, who said he's not concerned about other programs.
I don't know if you've heard this, but there's a report in the Houston Chronicle that Texas and Oklahoma are inquiring about joining the SEC.
I bet they would.
What would you think about something like that?
I don't know. I'm just worried about A&M. You know what I mean? Listen, we got the greatest league in ball. So, I mean, you know, that's the choices they make or what they do. I don't know, but I don't know how I feel about it. I'm just worried about A&M. I'll control what I want to control here.
That is a coach's answer right there, Jimbo Fisher, on the two teams, Oklahoma and Texas, trying to get their way into the SEC. Ben, when you heard this from Jimbo Fisher, what were your thoughts?
That Texas A&M certainly does not want their in-state rival, who they have not played each other in over a decade, to join the SEC. Texas A&M joined the Southeastern Conference back in the summer of 2011 to be that lone star team in the SEC, to be the only Texas school in the Southeastern Conference, and have branded themselves as such. It has not led to a whole lot of success on the field, although A&M did finish number 4 in the final AP poll of last season, as we welcome in our Sports Grid radio audience here to the first hour of the Morning After series. SiriusXM Channel 204, the mightier 1090 out on the West Coast. It's Ben Stevens and Ariel Epstein discussing what might change the landscape of college athletics forever. And we're talking about Texas A&M's coach, Jimbo Fisher, responding to the idea that Texas and Oklahoma might be looking speculatively to join the SEC in a few years. But when you look at the SEC and you look at the standpoint of why Texas and Oklahoma, Ariel, would even want to join this conference to make it a 16-team super league of sorts, it's all about money. Do not kid yourself. When you're looking for changes in college athletics, it is always about the money. Follow the paper trail, that paper being cash, because if it's about the money, you will find teams trying to get in on that money. And it really stems from a TV revenue standpoint. The Big 12 does not make a ton of money for their 10-member institutions when it comes to TV revenue. In fact, their deals with ESPN and Fox are done after the 2024-25 season. They are not renegotiating at this time. The SEC, however, just signed a hugely new lucrative deal with ESPN and the Disney companies for a $300 million a year baseline pay when that starts in 2024. Last year in 2020, even in a pandemic year, the SEC member institutions, each individually, each of them received, all 14 of those schools, $45 million from the SEC conference. Each school, all 14, doesn't matter if you're Ole Miss or Alabama, you received $45 million based on TV contracts and all that comes with it. So it's always about the money. And Texas and Oklahoma understand that at this point, they can try to broker their way into more of that money using their brand perspective. It's not a competition thing because Texas right now, who has won three conference titles in the past 25 years, they would get slammed in the SEC. It's about the money, Ariel, and don't kid yourselves if you're looking at this breaking news report.
A lot of people also want to make sure that they get money if they're on this show, and yeah, you could do that by betting on dogs who continue to bark today. However, when it comes to betting on teams inside these big conferences, Ben, it's going to be either shorter odds for teams such as Alabama, who would have to go up against Oklahoma. There's more teams to compete against. There's better teams to compete against. It's going to have huge implications on the futures market in college football down the stretch, just because you would think, well, more teams, better teams beating up on each other more could have a ripple effect down the line. Coming up next, we're going to talk Major League Baseball, what happened in the gambling world last night. We'll hear about it coming up next.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
On the morning after on Sports Grid, you're listening on Sirius XM Channel 204 with Ben Stevens. I'm Ariel Epstein. In Major League Baseball yesterday, favorites and underdogs split at 7 apiece. One favorite is a favorite that you may not be used to. That's the Detroit Tigers. Granted, they're at home. They're up against the Texas Rangers. The Tigers have not lost since the All-Star break. They are the hottest team in baseball currently. Yesterday against the Rangers, they were minus 111 on the money line. They pick up the 4-2 win. Ben, out of nowhere, we've got the Tigers as the hottest team in baseball.
I cannot believe I'm about to utter the three words I'm about to say, but tail the Tigers. What? Tail the Detroit Tigers? Winners of six straight, and we're going to bet on them even as favorites? Yeah, I guess so. I mean, they're playing the Texas Rangers right now, who have one of the worst records in all of Major League Baseball. And you see that even today as the Tigers are a minus 138 favorite currently for their game against the Texas Rangers. That's also in part because Mike Foltynewicz is starting for the Rangers. He's 2-9 this year and is an absolute gas can. But when you look at the Tigers right now, six straight wins, the fifth longest streak, the fifth best start following the All-Star break in Major League Baseball history for any team that entered that All-Star break 10 or more games below 500. Now the Tigers just five games below 500. But Ariel, if you're looking for a shot on the Tigers to maybe win their division or to get to the playoffs, that's not going to happen. The Chicago White Sox are the longest favorite in all of baseball right now when it comes to those divisional odds on the FanDuel Sportsbook. The White Sox are minus 6,000 to win the AL Central. The Tigers, if you really wanted to float some odds there, plus 20,000 200-1 to win the AL Central. So although Detroit is playing very well right now, don't look to the future. Focus on the present. Maybe even take the Tigers today, Ariel, against the Rangers as a minus 138 favorite. It makes me feel weird inside when I mention the Tigers are such a staunch favorite for a Major League Baseball game.
We'll see how things continue as the Tigers will take on better competition after Texas. Yet there's a team that apparently we haven't seen the best of yet. The New York Mets had Marcus Stroman on the mound yesterday. He is the first Mets pitcher to go eight or more shutout innings, allowing one hit or fewer since Jacob DeGrom on July 17th of 2016. Stroman spoke out after the game and says the Mets haven't even reached its peak yet.
Baseball's a long season. It's hard to be perfect for 162 games. So you're going to go in spurts. You're going to have ups and downs. But when you have a group like this, you know that the downs don't last. So it's only a matter of time until you click. And like I said, I truly don't even think we have fully clicked yet. And we're not fully healthy. So I'm excited for that day when we gel truly and everything's clicking on all cylinders. I think we're going to be a scary team.
The Mets are 2-1 against the Reds in Cincinnati this week. The Mets picked up a 7-0 win over the Reds yesterday, cashing minus 135 on the money line. The total was 11, and the Mets were the only ones to score, so with that 7-0 win, it hits the under. Ben, the one thing that stood out about this series between the Mets and the Reds to me is ever since that first game between these two teams where it went into the 11th inning and it was 15-11, it was a crazy game, yet the total has never gone back any. It hasn't gone back ever since. In fact, the total has stayed pretty high ever since that first game.
I mean, when you have Marcus Stroman go out there and pitch eight innings of shutout ball while striking out seven and only allowing one hit to the Cincinnati Reds, it makes sense. What Marcus Stroman said there, I think, is really founded in a lot of the statistics that you will see. The Mets offense now, over the past 2.5 weeks, surrounding the All-Star break, is the third best in Major League Baseball, as you have guys like Jeff McNeil and Michael Conforto get healthy, and you have Pete Alonso starting to pick it up. Dominic Smith has been great. If Francisco Lindor can be the $341 million man, this Mets team could be very, very dangerous as we go through the rest of this summer and down the home stretch into the postseason. And if you're looking for value right now, Ariel, I really think there is some on the New York Mets. The second shortest odds right now on FanDuel to win the National League pennant, tied with the San Diego Padres for those second shortest odds at plus 440. The Dodgers, of course, in that top spot, the favorite at plus 175. Not a ton of value there, but I think there is on the New York Mets. If you have Marcus Stroman even pitching near the caliber that he did yesterday, you throw in Taijuan Walker, who has been a pleasant surprise as a free agent acquisition this offseason for the Mets. And then, of course, you get Jacob DeGrom back healthy, which might be a while for the Mets, and they will be cautious with him on this stint on the IL. But you have those three pitchers heading into the postseason. You throw in Cookie Carrasco, who is coming back from injury. Maybe even Noah Syndergaard by the time we get to September, coming out of the bullpen and providing a spark there. This Mets team, coupled with what could be a very good offense, is going to be a force to be reckoned with right now in the National League. So at plus 440 to win the pennant, not bad value there. The odds to win the NL East are locked currently on the FanDuel Sportsbook. The Mets entered yesterday as the odds-on favorite at minus 175. So if everything continues to progress for the Mets, they get healthier and DeGrom gets back, then this Mets team could be a team to look out for by the time we get to the National League playoff picture.
Now, here's something that's been happening in Major League Baseball, which is irritating to me, and I'm not even on the team. The Toronto Blue Jays lose yesterday in their finale in Buffalo, losing 7-4 to the Boston Red Sox, who, by the way, side note, the Red Sox have been underdogs in this series, and the Red Sox was my best bet of the day at +1.5. I still don't understand how the Red Sox were not only getting 1.5 runs on the run line in Buffalo facing Toronto. It was only minus 130, minus 118. It never really hit that minus 160 mark where you feel it's unbettable. The San Francisco Giants, for example, in a divisional rivalry on the road as road dogs against the Los Angeles Dodgers, are getting the plus 1.5, but they're laying minus 178, minus 180 of juice to be able to take that 1.5 runs. The Red Sox yesterday had Garrett Richards on the mound, so that's probably why you got a decent number on the run line. Yet the Red Sox end up beating Toronto anyway, 7-4, cashing in as the road underdog. The Blue Jays are returning to Toronto on July 30th after the Canadian government has granted them the exemption for the U.S.-Canada travel ban. Ever since COVID, this Toronto team has been all over the place. They played in Florida. They've played in Buffalo. Finally, they get to go home, Ben.
And the Red Sox spoiling that Buffalo finale yesterday for the Toronto Blue Jays. But who was not spoiled? Vladimir Guerrero Jr. hitting his 32nd home run last night. The second most in all of Major League Baseball, of course, trailing Shohei Ohtani, who has 34. In fact, Vladdy also trails him in one more category. He has hit 11 home runs of 430 feet or longer this year. The guy who has the most, Shohei Ohtani, who has 12. But you bring up a great point about where the Blue Jays have played so far this year. Dunedin, Florida, in a spring training facility. In Buffalo, in a minor league baseball park. The Toronto Blue Jays have the fourth best offense, according to the metrics, so far this season. You have one of the leading home run hitters in all of Major League Baseball in Vladimir Guerrero Jr. It will be very interesting to see what that offense looks like and how it pertains to sides and especially totals when they go back to Rogers Center up there in Toronto to start playing their games back up in the Great White North. Something to monitor for those first couple of weeks that you might want to bet on the Blue Jays when you can look at their side, who they might be facing as a home favorite, or what the line might be when they go and play these home games, but especially when you look at the total for the offense that has been fourth best in the majors this year. How is that impacted now by going back to a Major League Baseball park back up in the Great White North? That will be very fascinating to see, Ariel.
The confusing part to me is not even so much about going to a park with MLB dimensions, because Toronto plays that way anyway on the road. To me, it's that they're supposed to be a home field advantage, and they don't have it. These players haven't played in this park for 2 years. 2 seasons, I should say, because it was a 60-game season last year. There's no home field advantage when now everyone else in Major League Baseball has played at their home park for the last 2 seasons, and you haven't. That's where I'm concerned for this team. They'll get used to dimensions. Now, I know stats may decrease a little bit. The stats may not be as strong because they're not in one of these ballparks, so I agree with you there. I'm just saying that from a home field advantage perspective, how can you even factor that in? How do you not take advantage of dogs, especially divisional dogs coming into Toronto, Ben?
Yeah, I mean, that's something to look out for. There will be fans there, maybe not as many as we have seen in some American ballparks, but that is something to notice. Their first game, July 30th, the week or so right after that, follow the trends for now the Toronto Blue Jays.
Coming up next, we're going to hear from some owners out in the NFL. It's NFL Talk. It's SiriusXM Channel 204.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Back on the Morning After on Sports Grid, it's SiriusXM Channel 204 with Ben Stevens. I'm Ariel Epstein. As the NFL is starting, we're getting rookies reporting to camps. We're getting some players reporting to camp. And there are some teams that are looking at the future and saying, hey, it's been a while. We haven't done this Super Bowl thing. One of those owners is Jerry Jones for the Dallas Cowboys. He lost his quarterback last year to an ankle that nearly fell off his leg. It was all downhill from there, even though it really never went uphill for the Cowboys last year, as they were below 500 once their quarterback, Dak Prescott, ended up breaking his ankle. Here's what the owner of the Cowboys had to say about how much that Super Bowl would mean to him.
Well, I found that he's not quite as responsive to one's individual asks as you might think. And I'm not trying to be sacrilegious here, but the facts are that I would right now, if I could, and I knew had a good chance to do it, I'd do anything known to man to get in a Super Bowl. That's a fact. And there's nothing in my mind that can have a higher priority than that.
That's the owner of the Cowboys, Jerry Jones, talking about how much it would mean for him and what he would do to get to a Super Bowl. Ben, the Cowboys have been struggling. They can't really make it far into the playoffs, even if they do make it. They're usually knocked out in that first round. Where do you see the Cowboys going this year?
Hope always remains eternal, though, for those Dallas Cowboys. Each and every year, we do the same thing. And right now, the benefit for the Cowboys is the fact they play in the NFC East, or the NFC Least, as many people have called it, over the past year, and rightfully so. The Cowboys are the favorites to win that division at plus 105, the shortest odds by a good substantial margin. Their team win total in a 17-game season now for 2021 is 9.5, even on both sides. The over minus 110, the under minus 110. We think the offense is going to be there for the Dallas Cowboys, right? With the return of a hopefully healthy Dak Prescott. Zeke Elliott is looking mean and slim and ready to go. They have an embarrassment of riches with that receiving core. When you look at Amari Cooper, Michael Gallup, of course, CeeDee Lamb, who is spectacular. So you expect the offense to be right where it has been. But the question for the Cowboys has always been that defense. And last year, it was the fifth worst scoring defense in all of the National Football League. They went out in the draft. They went defensive in the first round, getting Micah Parsons out of Penn State. He is going to be a game-changing linebacker for them in that front seven. But that's the question for the Cowboys. The biggest thing that helps the Cowboys is, Ariel, they play in the NFC East, and that's a good place to start.
The NFC East has the Cowboys as the team that's the best odds to win the division at plus 105. The Washington football team is at plus 270, the Giants at plus 440, and the Eagles at plus 550. I find it really interesting because Washington actually had the worst odds, around 5-1, as soon as the odds came out at the start of the offseason. However, then quickly, that number moved in favor of Washington. They now have the second best odds in the division. I do want to point out, so we only have about a minute left till we welcome in MSG. You got to look at this picture of Big Ben Roethlisberger. Ben Roethlisberger rolled up to camp yesterday, and he looks awesome. I mean, he looks like he lost at least 20, 30 pounds. He's in great shape. Alex Fasano and Jack, wow, they must be thrilled behind the scenes the way that Big Ben looks. Are we discrediting what Big Ben's capable of in Pittsburgh, Ben, with the Steelers having the third best odds in the AFC North to win it?
Awesome. I mean, he looks okay. I guess he's, what, like 36 or 37 now, and he does look leaner for Big Ben than Ben Roethlisberger has for the past couple of years. But I don't even think the reinvigoration of his health really makes the Steelers a team to look out for in the AFC North. I still think that division runs through the Baltimore Ravens and the Cleveland Browns at the moment, but I do like the Steelers team win total at 8.5. The over doesn't have the juice. It's only minus 105. That might be where I look for the Steelers right now.
I'm on the same page as you on the over for those 8.5 wins in Pittsburgh. We're going to welcome in MSG. Be back in about 15 seconds. Welcome to our MSG audience here in the first hour of the morning after on Sports Grid. You're also probably listening on SiriusXM Channel 204 and the Mightier 1090 on the West Coast. With Ben Stevens, I'm Ariel Epstein. We are in the middle of talking about the NFL and how there's certain teams with odds and good ways to take advantage of those odds. Let's start in the New York teams here in the metropolitan area, because in New Jersey, even though I know the only team in New York is the Buffalo Bills, but they're very far away from here. For New Jersey teams, the Giants and the Jets, these are two teams that are not being valued. And to me, I feel the Jets less than the Giants. The Giants more so, I think, are being overlooked. The Giants had one of the best defenses in the NFL last year. Their offense lost their best player, Saquon Barkley, their running back. They never really had a number one wide receiver. They had a bunch of good receivers. Now in the offseason, picking up a number one wide receiver in Kenny Galladay, this is the year for their quarterback, Daniel Jones, to try to take the next step. If he can, the Giants could be a sneaky team in the NFC East, Ben.
That's the same reason we talked about the Dallas Cowboys having the shortest odds in the NFC East and how that's a benefit for Dallas. The Cowboys at plus 105, I don't think there's a ton of value there. And what right now is a division that you could call a toss-up. Plus 440, for the New York Giants on FanDuel to win the NFC East. I do think there's value because it starts with that defense for me, Ariel, because last year the Giants struggled. They lost 7 of their first 8 games, but then they responded in the second half of the season, winning 5 of their last 8 to close out 2020, building some momentum, winning 3 straight against that division in the NFC East and having a really good shot to win the division had it not been for the Eagles tossing a game. We don't need to get into that once again as we look ahead to 2021, though. That defense was really good last year for the New York Giants. And the offense, you would assume, would be better with the return of Saquon Barkley. Daniel Jones took a step last year. You mentioned Kenny Golladay. They went out and got Kadarius Toney, the speedster out of Florida, in the first round of the NFL draft. I didn't love the pick, but still, he does add a dimension to that New York Giants offense. You could also look at this team and think there is a higher ceiling than the 7-team win total they are posted at right now in the FanDuel Sportsbook. Because, Ariel, you talk about undervalued. I was surprised to see a 7 on the New York Giants. I thought in a 17-game season, might we see an 8 or maybe even a 7.5, but 7 with the over juiced at minus 125 was a little bit of a lesser value than I expected to see on the Giants. But again, the value at plus 440 to win the NFC East, to claim that division, I think is certainly there for the Giants, and it's definitely worth a sprinkle in my mind to look at the Giants, look at how they responded down the home stretch of 2020, know that in the second year of Joe Judge, they're trending in the right division and in the right direction within that division. I think there is some value at plus 440 right now in the FanDuel Sportsbook on the New York Giants to win the NFC East.
Yeah, that's where I'm going here. NFC East, to me, the team to look at is that plus 440 on the Giants. Washington, I love their defense. I'm concerned about the offense with Ryan Fitzpatrick as their quarterback. As for the Cowboys, I'm concerned about their defense. It was supposed to be the best linebacking core ever, and injuries continue to bite the depth of the defense in Dallas. Then for Philly, who knows? That's just a hot mess. Did they improve the offensive line? Is it possible to improve that offensive line? It feels like it's going to take a decade to help that O-line. And it addition to changing systems, because you have a new quarterback now that your franchise quarterback Carson Wentz is no longer with the team. Switching over to the Jets, this is another interesting division. I guess it kind of parlays in with the Buffalo Bills, who are a New York team. The Bills are the favorites to win this division. The Jets to win the division are 21-1. The Jets to win the AFC 50-1. The Super Bowl 100-1. The win total for the Jets is sitting at 6. Ben, what do you make of the numbers surrounding the Jets this year with their first-year head coach, Robert Saleh?
I mean, I guess if you're a Jets fan, at least FanDuel put the juice on the over. Makes you feel a little bit better about seeing a team win total hung at 6. It's minus 115 to the over, minus 105 to the under, so that's kind of cool, I guess. I still think that number's a little bit high. I would be quite shocked, frankly, if the New York Jets won 6 games this year. I know that Zach Wilson is there now. It's the new regime under Robert Saleh, and then you have Mike LaFleur running that offense, and they're very high on what Zach Wilson does. I don't need to get into my thoughts on the Jets should have taken Justin Fields at number 2, but again, that's not really the point here. I don't see a lot of results this year for the Jets, but I still think you could see positive momentum out of the New York Jets this year in the first year of that new regime. The defense has to be a little bit better, but Robert Saleh, of course, one of the best defensive-minded coaches in all the National Football League. If they take some strides offensively and they have the pieces in place to do so with Zach Wilson, with Elijah Moore, who they got out of Ole Miss, Elijah Vera Tucker, who will now be a staple of their offensive line alongside Mekhi Becton. I mean, there are some pieces in place along this young Jets roster to take strides this year. Is it an over of the team win total? I don't think so. Plus 2100 to win the AFC East, tied for the third longest odds of all teams right now in the NFL? I don't think so. But I hope you could look outside of the box score at times for the Jets this year and try to find some improvements there in the first year of Robert Saleh. That would be the optimism and the positivity I would try to gain out of being a New York Jets fan right now.
I mentioned how the Jets are 21-1 to win the division. The odds are down on FanDuel currently. All of FanDuel's down currently. Yet I have a snapshot for the AFC division odds from just a few weeks ago. And the Bills are the favorites. They're in minus money. Last I saw was minus 155. It could be a little bit more, but it's definitely minus on the Bills. The Miami Dolphins have the second best odds. The Patriots have the third best odds. And then you have the New York Jets. I don't see value in this division. I would be extremely shocked if the Bills don't make not only another push at the division, but another push at the AFC Championship game. The Bills are a really good team. All they have to do is combine what happened last year and the year before 2 years ago, great defense under a defensive-minded head coach in Sean McDermott. Last year, improved offense, getting Stephon Diggs, the number one wide receiver for Josh Allen. The defense wasn't as good last year as it was 2 years ago. Can a defensive-minded head coach make this Bills defense the way it was? That team should win a Super Bowl. Stay right here on the grid. Craig Mish is going to join us, our MLB insider, up next.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Here on the morning after on Sports Grid, Sirius XM Channel 204 with Ben Stevens. I'm Ariel Epstein. Joining us now, it's our own MLB insider from here at Sports Grid, Craig Mish. You could catch him right after our show at noon Eastern time on Fantasy Sports Today. Craig, this is the last week that you really get to sleep, and then the Major League Baseball trade deadline comes up at the end of next week, and you're pretty much a nocturnal person.
Yeah, well, look, the way I describe it to people that help me break the news, just so they understand how important it is for me, especially with Miami's aspect. Like some of the other stuff I'll get, but it's not nearly as important, is that the winter is like the Super Bowl for me. Like the winter, that's really the time because of free agency when players are signing. Like that's the Super Bowl. So this, the trade deadline, is kind of like March Madness. It's like not quite as big, but still kind of big, because really those are the two, I think, the two biggest sporting events in the country.
With that said, Craig, let's just dive into what you're expecting to see. What teams do you expect to make some big moves come the end of next week?
Yeah, I think that it's pretty identifiable this year, which is why I think we're going to have an active deadline. We haven't really had one the last couple of years, and in 2019, you had 20 teams that still felt like they were in it at the trade deadline. I don't think that is the case this season. The NL West is wrapped up. All three teams are going to make the postseason, that's for sure. You have the Milwaukee Brewers, who seem to be in line to make the postseason as well, and those other teams in the division are not doing very well. And in the East, it looks like the Mets, and of course, that's still in flux. Over in the American League, you pretty much know that the Boston Red Sox are going to be in some form. You know, the White Sox are going to be in, and it looks like Oakland and Houston. So where's the excitement in September? I don't know. There may not be any, but there will be next week because all those teams are going to be fighting with each other. Look, it's been reported nationally, and I can tell you the same. The Cubs are going to have the players, that the biggest players, I think, that are on the move. I think Chris Bryant is going to get traded next week. I think Craig Kimbrell is going to get traded. Wilson Contreras will be obviously another big name to watch to see if he does as well. So I think those will be the big ones. And then the most compelling name will be Max Scherzer, to see if Washington rolls the dice with them trying to get him back after the season, which usually doesn't happen. So we'll see if Washington decides to end that tenure there with Mad Max in D.C.
So, Craig, those are some of the biggest names, maybe some of the biggest teams looking to make a move at the deadline. Are there any smaller type of... Okay, we're waiting on Craig Mish here for some technical difficulties there. We'll get back to Craig's thoughts. But, Ariel, I wonder, because a lot of times when you look at teams like the Tampa Bay Rays, who might not make the biggest splashes at the trade deadline, if they make a smaller move that really can benefit them as they get down through the American League and as we finish off the season, if there's a smaller move a team might make, that might not draw the headlines, but that can impact necessarily what they do. As I think we have Craig Mish back as we're trying to work through some of these things. But Ariel, I'll toss it back to you for just a second. I think the trade deadline, when what, we're 8 days out or something like that, July 30th is when we're looking at, is going to be very fascinating to see if there's a smaller move a team makes that might impact the race even more than some of the headlines we might see.
It's also taking into consideration that those smaller teams still have to play these better teams within their divisions. And we have Craig Mish back. So, Ben, ask your question because I didn't want you to not get one in.
Well, Craig, we were just talking about the idea that there might be a smaller move or a smaller team that makes a move that could impact them even more. There are a couple of teams that might not be the headline teams you expect to be active at the deadline.
Yeah, I think that there will be some teams that are already planning for next season. Seattle, I think, is a team that in general has made a lot of trades in the past. We haven't heard a lot from them this year, but I think they're going to try to compete in 2022. So that would be a team, I think, Ben, to keep an eye on for sure. And obviously the Rays are going to surprise some people. They always do. They always are active at the deadline. So those would be two teams in the American League, one team that's going for it and one team that may not have a chance. And then the other fascinating team to me in the National League will be the Cincinnati Reds, because, man, it's been a long time since the Reds have been formidable. And one way or the other, they got to get back into this thing. So hopefully for them, it'll be sooner than later.
A few big name teams. The two teams that at the beginning of the year had the two best odds to win the World Series, the Los Angeles Dodgers, the New York Yankees. Mark Feinstein of MLB Network tweeted this out. He said, with the trade deadline approaching, the Yankees are checking in on outfielders everywhere. The Dodgers are on the starting pitching warpath, and the Athletics are scouring the market for relief help. With the Yankees and Dodgers, Craig, those are the two that stood out to me the most. The Dodgers have had major pitching issues, whether it's injuries to Kershaw, whether it's Bauer not being allowed to play because of off-the-field issues. The Yankees, they are down there on the odds board around, the 7th, 8th best odds to win the World Series now. What do you make of what these top two teams are going to do come next week?
Well, I don't think it really matters for the Yankees. I think they're just too flawed this season, and even if they made the postseason, I could not look at their odds and think that they're going to get to the World Series. I would much rather take a long shot on Tampa Bay than on New York. I just don't think the Yankees are built correctly right now. And their bullpen has struggled. And if Chapman can't pitch, forget it. Like that's pretty much the end there. And as far as the Dodgers, look, you still get about 2-1 on FanDuel, and they have never been shy at the deadline to make big deals. And sometimes it's to expiring contracts. The big one a couple of years ago, if you remember, they acquired Yu Darvish from the Texas Rangers. So look, could the Dodgers end up with Max Scherzer? Certainly. Could they end up with Chris Bryant? I think there's a chance of that. So look for LA to do what they always do, which is sort of move money around, call up young prospects, and get guys that can help them for 2 months and then bid farewell. Manny Machado is another good example of that as well. They're going to make a big move.
Craig, these moves made at the trade deadline will obviously have an impact on the futures market. So would you advise bettors out there to try to jump in now ahead of the moves at the deadline to find value, or wait to see what happens and then after that start to make your moves when it comes to the futures market?
Yeah, look, I think at this point, I mean, it's best to do this before the season. I don't really get into it once this point happens. But if your plan is to take the Dodgers, then yeah, I mean, they're going to do something big and they're not going to be plus 195 or plus 180, whatever they are on FanDuel. But at the same time, if you think, for example, Tampa Bay is going to go out and make a big move, then maybe you jump, ahead of them now. But look, at this point, with injuries and so much unknown, and the fact that the deadline is next week, if you're just sitting by your computer and sitting on FanDuel, if they have those odds up while the deadline is going on, then live bet it. That would be my best way to go about it.
Craig Mish joining us, our MLB insider from here on Sports Grid. Craig, you wrote for the Miami Herald. You wrote an article about Starling Marte, the outfielder for the Marlins, and how there's not been any kind of agreement on an extension. How important is it to the Marlins to get this deal done?
Yeah, it's not getting done. It's over with. They tried. They went back and forth and, sort of went through a lot of different scenarios. But Starling Marte is going to be a free agent at the end of the season at 32. And he's going to command a 4-year contract, which would take him into his age 36 season. And Miami's just not willing to give him that 4 years. There's a couple schools of thought with that. One is that you don't see many 35-year-old center fielders playing at a gold glove level, but at the second time is that you don't see many teams like Miami that have no other option in center field. So it's very difficult for them to make that sort of decision to part with Marte. So Miami, I believe, is going to trade him next week and probably get his replacement back in return, whether it's a younger player for years down the road or a major league player. But they have not been able to come to terms with Marte. So my guess is that next Friday before 5 o'clock Eastern, he'll be dealt to another team.
Craig, I feel like we ask you this every time you're on the morning after, but the NL East still really hasn't shaken itself out to this point. Nobody has run away with this division. So as we have the trade deadline in just about a week, what do you make of the NL East as where we stand here after the All-Star break?
Well, look, the Mets are in the best position because they have gotten off to the best 100-game start, essentially. But if history is going to tell us anything, it's that the president of baseball operations of the Philadelphia Phillies and Dave Dombrowski is another GM that's going to make a really big move at the deadline, because history tells you as much. He did it with the Florida Marlins. He did it with the Detroit Tigers. He did it with the Boston Red Sox. Dombrowski is the kind of general manager that you want when you want to win right now. So I could absolutely see Philadelphia going after a bullpen arm or two. Craig Kimbrell is the most popular name that is out there. He would be a game changer for them in the ninth inning. And Ben, when you look at the Phillies lineup versus any other lineup in that division, not only does it stack up, it's probably better than any other lineup in the National League East when all those guys are healthy. So that would be the team to watch clearly for me. The Mets, I think, will have some counterpunch in them. The owner at this point really didn't have to go out and spend a ton of money in the offseason. He did sign Lindor to the extension, but look, he hasn't been shy about making moves. It's a two-team race for me. I know Atlanta's trying to stay in it, but that's a lot to ask, losing your best player, Ronald Acuña Jr., and still feeling like you have a shot. I know they're going to try, but I just don't see it happening.
According to the Mets pitcher yesterday, Marcus Stroman, he says the Mets have not even reached its full potential because injuries have been killing them. Jacob DeGrom, the Mets ace, an example of that. Second or third stint now on the IL. He has that sore tightness in his right arm. Craig, when it comes to DeGrom on the IL again, how concerned are you for the Mets' futures?
Well, they put themselves in a decent enough position where if he misses a month and comes back in late August or September, I still think they'll be fine. I haven't really heard anything on Syndergaard at this point, but to Stroman's comment, and again, I can understand how he would feel that way if that's what he said in terms of the quote, but every team can feel that way right now because this is the most injured season we've ever seen in the history of Major League Baseball. I think every team is feeling like they're hurt and haven't gotten to their potential there. But I think for the Mets, it's going to come down to those head-to-head games against Philadelphia and Atlanta. The Mets seem to have enough offense to get through it. But without making a move and watching what Philadelphia, I think, is going to do, I think they're going to have a problem winning the division. They just haven't been consistent. They lost a lot of games to the Pirates. They could have lost a lot more. Look, the Mets are on shaky ground. It was a division at the beginning of the season that everybody said was going to be the best in baseball, and it turned out to be the worst. So just goes to show you, no one knows anything.
Craig, only about a minute and a half here, and I would say you know a lot of things, but nobody running away with the NL East. However, in the AL Central, that's the White Sox division, and right now they are running away with it. Minus 6,000 on the FanDuel Sportsbook to win the AL Central. When you look at the White Sox and what their outlook might be to win an American League pennant or a World Series, what do you make of Chicago chances there?
They have a good shot. If they get back Eloy Jimenez and Lewis Robert, those are their two big corner outfielders or DHs that could really put them over the top. Tony La Russa, another win now manager, I would expect them to do that. In terms of fighting, they're going to have to fight with Houston. I like Houston a little bit more than I do the White Sox. Why? Astros have a lot of experience on that team. And I think that, to me, that would be the club that I would take. I think Houston and Tampa Bay, if I was going at it with two teams to, you know, face each other in the American League Championship Series, that would be the direction that I would go. Look, I've been wrong on Boston all season long, Ben, so I'm just going to keep doubling down until they fall apart. But obviously they're going to win the division or make the postseason for sure.
The Red Sox run lines. Here's the thing. A lot of people don't have faith in the Red Sox. When they're on the road, they've been dogs. Just keep taking that 1.5. Craig Mish, catch him coming up next at noon Eastern time right here on Sports Grid, Fantasy Sports Today. And Craig, good luck at the trade deadline. We're going to hear more from you next week, hopefully. Hopefully you have the time for us next week. I'm excited to hear any kind of breaking news that you'll have for us.
All right. Thanks for having me. Have a great day.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
back on the morning after on Sports Grid. Time to close out hour number one here on the show. We're going to get to our poll. Let's get to Fade the Public. Ben, I had to just go full force into this question because I know you're going to have a lot to say about it. The question is, are you in favor of a super conference in college football? And the public has spoken, and majority, just under 66%, say no. They are not in favor of a super conference. Are you fading the public?
I'm looking at that no right there. I see just under 66%. You know me, I love to fade the public at all costs. But no, I cannot fade the public. I don't love this idea of a super conference. I don't love a 16-team SEC and the ramifications that would have for the rest of the collegiate sports landscape, especially when it's Texas and Oklahoma joining the 16-team SEC super conference, because the Big 12 then becomes obsolete. What happens to the idea of the Power Five? Do they take over the American Athletic Conference? Do you have some of these other schools in the Big 12 joining other Power Five schools like Iowa State going to the Big 10? Do you have teams maybe trying to go out west to the Pac-12? What exactly does this mean for some of the lesser conferences as well that already have a hard enough time earning the national recognition for the college football playoff? So no, I hate this idea of a 16-team SEC super conference. Also, I love the Big Ten, and I would hate 16 teams in the SEC to the Big Ten's 14. And then what exactly does that mean? No, I hate it. I cannot fade the public today. I agree with the public. I don't like 16 teams in any type of super conference. We have already shown we don't like super leagues. I don't want this to happen for the SEC.
The SEC already tries and is, in a sense to many people, a very strong, and if not the strongest, conference in football. Now to add more teams, taking away from other conferences, lessening the competition, I'm just a purist in all forms. That's my problem. I don't like change, so you can't ask me these kinds of questions. Eventually, I'd get used to it, but if it was up to me, sports would probably have stayed the same since the 1920s. I'm the worst. Coming up next, we have hour number two. Stay right here on the grid. You're listening on SiriusXM, Channel 204, the Sports Grid Network. We've got you covered till noon Eastern.
Are you one of us?
We've just got one question.
Do you like games?
We do.
Do you like winning?
What a coincidence. So